9. Nasun, needed. Because you are Esun, I should not need to remind you that all Nasun knew before Found Moon was Terimo, and the ash-darkening world of the road during a fifth season. You know your daughter, don't you? So it should be obvious, therefore, that Found Moon becomes something she never believed she had before, a true home. It is not a new calm. At its core is the village of Jekity, which was a city before the choking season some 100 years before. During that season, Mount Akok blanketed the Antarctics with ash. But that is not what nearly killed Jekity, since the city had vast stores and sturdy wooden slate walls at the time. Jekity, the city, died because of human errors, compounded. A child lighting a lantern spilled oil, which set off a fire that swept the western edge of the calm and burned a third of it before people managed to get it under control. The calm's headman died in the fire, and when 3 qualified candidates stepped forward to take his place, factionalism and infighting meant that the burned section of the wall didn't get rebuilt quickly enough. A tibbit run, small furred animals that swarm like ants when food is scarce enough, swept into the calm and took care of anyone too slow to get off the ground, and the calm's ground-level store caches. The survivors lasted for a time on what was left, then starved. By the time the sky cleared 5 years later, less than 5,000 souls remained of the 100,000 who'd begun the season. The Jekity of now is even smaller. The poor, unskilled repairs made to the wall during choking are still in place, and while the stores have been elevated and replenished sufficiently to meet Imperial standards, this is only on paper. The calm has done a bad job of rotating old, spoiled stores out and laying in new. Strangers have rarely asked to join Jekity over the years. Even by Antarctic standards, the calm is seen as ill-fated. Its young people usually leave to talk or marry their way into other growing communities where jobs are more plentiful, and the memory of suffering does not linger. When Shafa found this sleepy terrace-farming calm 10 years before, and convinced the then-headwoman, Mighty, to allow him to set up a special guardian facility within the calm's walls, she hoped that it was the beginning of a turnaround for her home. Guardians are a healthy addition to any community, aren't they? And indeed, there are now 3 guardians in Jekity, including Shafa, along with 9 children of varying ages. There were 10, but when one of the children caused a brief but powerful earthquake amid a temper tantrum one evening, the child vanished. Mighty did not ask questions. It's good to know the guardians are doing their jobs. Nasun and her father do not know this as they move into the calm, though others will eventually tell them. The healers, an elderly doctor and a forest herbalist, spend 7 days getting Jija out of danger because he develops a fever not long after the surgery on his wound. Nasun tends him the whole while. When it becomes clear that he'll survive, however, Shafa introduces them to Mighty, who's delighted to learn that Jija is a stone napper. The calm has not had one for several decades, so they've been sending orders to nappers in the calm of Devatiris 20 miles away. There's an old empty house in the calm with an attached kiln, and while a forge would have been more useful, Jija tells her he can make it work. Mighty gives it a month, to be sure, and listens when her people tell her that Jija is polite and friendly and sensible. He's physically hearty, too, since he's recovering from that wound like a proper resistant, and since he managed to survive the road with no companion but a little girl. Everyone notices how well-behaved and devoted his daughter is, too. Not at all what anyone would expect of a Raga. Thus, at the end of the month, Jija receives the name Jija Resistant Jekity. They induct him with a ceremony that most of the calm has never seen before. So long has it been since anyone new joined the calm. Mighty herself had to look up the details of the ceremony in an old lore book. Then they throw a party, which is very nice. Jija tells them he's honored. Nasun remains just Nasun. No one calls her Nasun resistant to Remo, though she still introduces herself that way upon meeting new people. Shafa's interest in her is simply too obvious, but she causes no trouble, so the people of Jekati are as friendly toward her as they are toward Jija, if in a slightly more guarded fashion. It is the other Origen children who unashamedly embrace Nasun for everything she is. The oldest of them is a coaster boy named Aits, who speaks with a strange, choppy accent that Nasun thinks of as exotic. He's 18, tall, long-faced, and if there is a perpetual shadow in his expression, it does nothing to mar his beauty in Nasun's eyes. He's the one who welcomes Nasun on the first day after it becomes clear that Jija will live.
Found Moon is our community, he says in a deep voice that makes Nasun's heart race,
leading her to the small compound that Shafa's people have built over near Jekati's weakest wall. It's up a hill. He leads her toward a pair of gates that swing open as they approach.
Numinous at the fulcrum, and Jekati has this. Place where you can be yourself and always be safe. Shafa and the other guardians are here for us too, remember? This is ours.
Found Moon has walls of its own, shaped from the shafts of columnar rock that dominate this area. But these are uniformly sized and perfectly even in conformation. Nasun doesn't even have to assess them to realize they have been raised by orogeny. Within the compound are a handful of small buildings, a few new, but most parts of old Jekati left abandoned as the Calm's population dwindled. Whatever those used to be, they have since been refurbished into a house for the guardians, a mess hall, a wide-tiled practice area, several ground-level store sheds, and a dormitory for the children. The other children fascinate Nasun. Two are West Coasters, small and brown and black-haired and angle-eyed. Sisters, and they look it, named Oegan and Yinegan. Nasun has never seen West Coasters before, and she stares until she realizes they are staring at her in turn. They ask to touch her hair, and she asks to touch theirs back. This makes them all realize how strange and silly a request that is, and they giggle and become instant friends without a head petted between them. Then there is Pido, another Somid ladder, who looks like he's got more than a little Antarctic in him because his hair is bright yellow and his skin is so white that it nearly glows. The others tease him about it, but Nasun tells him that sometimes she burns in the sun too, though she carefully doesn't mention that this takes the better part of a day rather than minutes. And his face alights. The other children are all from lower Somidlats comms, and all have visible sunset in them. Dishati was in training to become a stone napper before the guardians found her, and she asks Nasun all sorts of questions about her father. Nasun warns her off, talking to Jija directly. Dishati understands at once, though she is sad about it. Wude gets sick when he eats certain kinds of grain, and is very small and frail because he doesn't get enough good food, though his orogeny is the strongest of the bunch. Lashar looks at Nasun coldly and sneers at her accent, though Nasun can't tell the difference between how she speaks and how Lashar does. The others tell her it's because Lashar's grandfather was an equatorial and her mother is a local comm leader. Alas, Lashar is an origin, so none of that matters anymore. But her upbringing tells. Shirk is not Shirk's name, but she won't tell anyone what that really is, so they started calling her that after she tried to duck out of chores one afternoon. She doesn't anymore, but the name stuck. Peek is similarly nicknamed, because she is tremendously shy and spends most of her time hiding behind someone else. She has only one eye and a terrible scar down the side of her face, where her grandmother tried to stab her, the others whisper when Peek is not around. Her real name is Zif. Nasun makes 10, and they want to know everything about her, where she came from, what kinds of foods she likes to eat, what life was like in Terimo. Has she ever held a baby Kirkuza because they are so soft? and in whispers they ask about other things, once it becomes clear that Shafa favors her. What did she do on the day of the rifting? How did she learn such skill with Orogeny? This is how Nasun discovers that it is rare for their kind to be born to Orogen parents. Wude comes the closest, because his aunt realized what he was and taught him what she could in secret. But this amounted to little more than how not to ice people by accident. Some of the others only learned that lesson the hard way. And Oegin grows very quiet during this conversation. Dashadi actually didn't know she was an Orogen until the rifting, which Nasun finds incomprehensible. She is the one who asks the most questions, but quietly, when the others are not around, and in a tone of shame. Another thing Nasun discovers is that she is much, much, much better than any of them. It is not simply a matter of training. Aits has had years more training than her, and yet his orogeny is as thin and frail as Wude's body. Aits is in control of it, enough to do no harm, but he can't do much good with it either, like find diamonds or make a cool spot to stand in on a hot day or slice a harpoon in half. The others stare when Nasun tries to explain the lattermost, and then Shafa comes away from the wall of a nearby building. One of the guardians is always watching while they gather and train and play, to take her for a walk.
What you do not understand, Shafa says, resting a hand on her shoulder as they walk, is that an Orogen's skill is not just a matter of practice, but of innate ability. So much has been done to breed the gift out of the world.
He sighs a little, sounding almost disappointed.
There are few left who are born with a high level of ability.
My father killed my brother because of it, Nasun says. Uchi had more orogeny than me. All he ever did was listen with it, though, and say weird things sometimes. He made me laugh. She keeps the words soft because they still hurt to say, and because she said them so rarely. Chicha never wanted to hear it, so she has had no one with whom she could discuss her grief until now. They're over by the southern terraces of Jekity, successive platforms high above the floor of a lava plain valley. The terraces are still heavily planted with grains, greens, and beans. Some of the plants are beginning to look sickly from the thinning sunlight. This will probably be the last harvest before the ash clouds get too thick.
Yes. And that is a tragedy, little one. I'm sorry.
Shafa sighs.
My brethren have done their job too well, I think, in warning the populace about the dangers of untrained Orogens. Not that any of those warnings were false. Just exaggerated, perhaps.
He shrugs. She feels a flash of anger that this exaggeration is why her father looks at her with such hate sometimes. But the anger is nebulous, directionless. She hates the world, not anyone in particular. That's a lot to hate. He thinks I'm evil, she finds herself saying. Shafa looks at her for a long moment. There is something confused in his gaze for a moment, a wondering sort of frown that he gets from time to time. Not quite intentionally, Nasun senses him in a fleeting pass, and yes, those strange silvery threads are flaring within him again, lacing through his flesh and tugging on his mind from somewhere near the back of his head. She stops as soon as his expression clears, because he is fiendishly sensitive to her uses of orogeny, and he does not like her doing anything without his permission. But when he is being tugged by the bright threads, he notices less.
You aren't evil, he says firmly. You are exactly as nature made you, and that is special, Nasun. Special and powerful in ways that are atypical for even one of your kind. In the fulcrum, you would have rings by now, perhaps 4, or even 5. For one your age, that's amazing.
This makes Nasun happy, even though she doesn't fully understand. Wude says the fulcrum rings go up to 10?
Wude has the most talkative of the three guardians, agate-eyed Nida. Nida sometimes says things that don't make sense, but the rest of the time she shares useful wisdom, so all the kids have learned to simply tune out the gibbering.
Yes, 10.
For some reason, Shafa seems displeased by this.
But this is not the fulcrum, Nossun. Here, you must train yourself, since we have no senior origins to train you. And that's good, because there are things you can do.
His face twitches, flicker of silver through him again, then quiescence.
Things you are needed to do, which... things that fulcrum training cannot do.
Nossun considers this, for the moment ignoring the silver. Things like making my orogeny go away.
She knows her father has asked this of Shafa.
That would be possible when you reach a certain point of development. But to reach that point, it is best that you learn to use your powers with no preconceptions.
He glances at her. His expression is noncommittal, but somehow she knows. He does not want her changing into a still, even if it does become possible.
You are lucky to have been born to an origin skilled enough to manage you as a child. You must have been very dangerous in your infancy and early years.
It's Nasun's turn to shrug at this. She lowers her gaze and scuffs at a weed that has worked its way up between two basalt columns.
I guess.
He glances at her, his gaze sharpening. Whatever is wrong with him, and there is something wrong with all of Found Moon's guardians, it vanishes whenever she tries to hide something from him. It is as if he can sense obfuscations.
Tell me more about your mother.
Nossun does not want to talk about her mother. She's probably dead. It seems likely, though she remembers feeling her mother's effort to shunt the rifting away from Tarima. People would have noticed that, though, wouldn't they? Mama always warned Nossun against doing orogeny during a shake, because that is how most origins get discovered. And Uche is what happens when origins get discovered.
Perhaps.
His head cocks like that of a bird.
I've seen the marks of fulcrum training in your technique. You are precise. It's unusual to see it in a grit.
He pauses, looks confused again for a moment, smiles.
A child of your age. How did she train you?
Nossun shrugs again, thrusting her hands into her pockets. He will hate her if she tells him. If not that, he will surely at least think less of her. Maybe he will give her up. Shafa moves to sit on a nearby terrace wall. He also keeps watching her, smiling politely, waiting. Which makes Nossun think of a third, worse possibility. What if she refuses to tell him? And he gets angry and kicks her and her father out of Found Moon. Then she will have nothing left but Jija.
And she sneaks another look at Shafa. His brow has furrowed slightly, not in displeasure, but concern. The concern does not seem false. He is concerned about her. No one has shown concern for her in a year. Thus, finally, Nossun says, we would go out to a place near the end of the valley, away from Tarimo. She would tell Daddy she was taking me out hunting for herbs.
Shafa nods.
That is something that children are normally taught in comms outside the Equatorial Node network. A useful skill, should a season come. She would call it girl time. Daddy used to laugh.
And you practiced orogeny there?
Nossun nodded, looking at her hands.
She would talk to me about it when Daddy wasn't home. Girl talk.
Discussions of wave mechanics and math, endless quizzes, anger when Nossun did not answer quickly or correctly.
But at the tip, the place she took me to, it was just practice. She had drawn circles on the ground, I had to push around a boulder, and my torus couldn't get any wider than the fifth ring, and then the fourth, and then the third. Sometimes she would throw the boulder at me. Terrifying to have 3 tons of stone rumbling along the ground toward her, and to wonder, if I can't do it, will Mama stop? She had done it, so that question remains unanswered. Shafa chuckles.
Amazing. At Nasun's look of confusion, he adds, that is precisely how Origin children were trained at the Fulcrum. But it seems your training was substantially accelerated.
He tilts his head again, considering.
If you had only occasional practice sessions to conceal them from your father.
Nasun nods. Her left hand flexes closed and then open again as if on its own. She said there wasn't time to teach me the gentle way. And anyway, I was too strong. She had to do what would work.
I see.
Yet she can feel him watching her, waiting. He knows there's more. He prompts.
It must have been challenging, though.
Nasun nods, shrugs. I hated it. I yelled at her once, told her she was mean. I told her I hated her and she couldn't make me do it. Shafa's breathing is, when the silver light is not stuttering or flickering within him, remarkably even. She has thought before that he sounds like a sleeping person, so steady is it. She listens to him breathe, not asleep, but calming nevertheless. She got really quiet. Then she said, are you sure you can control yourself? And she took my hand. She bites her lip then. She broke it. Shafa's breath pauses just for an instant.
Your hand?
Nasun nods. She draws a finger across her palm, where each of the long bones connecting wrist to knuckle still ache sometimes when it's cold. After he says nothing more, she can continue. She said it didn't matter if I hated her. It didn't matter if I didn't want to be good at Orogeny. Then she took my hand and said, don't ice anything. She had a round rock and she hit my hand with it. The sound of stone striking flesh. Wet popping sounds as her mother set the bones. Her own voice screaming, her mother's voice cutting through the pounding of blood in her ears. You're fire, Nasun. You're lightning. Dangerous unless captured in wires. But if you can control yourself through pain, I'll know you're safe. I didn't ice anything. After that, her mother had taken her home and told Jija that Nasun had fallen and caught herself badly. True to her word, she'd never made Nasun go to the tip with her again. Jija had remarked later on how quiet Nasun had become that year. Just something that happens when girls start to grow up, Mama had said.
No. If Daddy was Jija, then Mama had to be Esun.
Shafa is very quiet. He knows what she is now, though. A child so willful that her own mother broke her hand to make her mind. A girl whose mother never loved her, only refined her, and whose father will only love her again if she can do the impossible and become something she is not.
That was wrong, Shafa says.
His voice is so soft she can barely hear it. She turns to look at him in surprise. He is staring at the ground and there is a strange look on his face. Not the usual wandering, confused look that he gets sometimes. This is something he actually remembers, and his expression is guilty, rueful, sad.
It's wrong to hurt someone you love, Nasun.
Nasun stares at him. Her own breath catches, and she doesn't notice until her chest aches and she is forced to suck in air.
It's wrong to hurt someone you love.
It's wrong.
It's wrong. It has always been wrong.
Then Shafa lifts a hand to her. She takes it. He pulls, and she falls willingly. And then she is in his arms, and they are very tight and strong around her the way her father's have not been since before he killed Uche. In that moment, she does not care that Shafa cannot possibly love her, when he has known her for only a few weeks. She loves him. She needs him. She will do anything for him. With her face pressed into Shafa's shoulder, Nasun senses it when the silver flicker happens again. This time, in contact with him, she also feels the slight flinch of his muscles. It is barely a fluctuation, and might be anything. A bug bite, a shiver in the cooling evening breeze. Somehow, though, she realizes that it is actually pain. Frowning against his uniform, Nasun cautiously reaches toward that strange place at the back of Shafa's head, where the silver threads come from. They are hungry, the threads, somehow. As she gets closer to them, they lick at her, seeking something. Curious, Nasun touches them and senses, what, a faint tug? Then she is tired. Shafa flinches again and pulls back, holding her at arm's length.
What are you doing?
She shrugs awkwardly. You needed it. You were hurting. Shafa turns his head from side to side, slowly, not in negation, but as if checking for something he expects to be there, which is now gone.
I am always hurting, little one. It's part of what guardians are. But
his expression is wondering. By this, Nasun knows the pain is gone, at least for now. You're always hurting? She frowns. Is it that thing in your head? His gaze snaps back to her immediately. She has never been afraid of his ice-white eyes, even now as they turn very cold. What? She points at the back of her own skull. It is where the sesapinae are located. She knows from lectures on biomimicry in creche. There's a little thing in you, here. I don't know what it is, but I sensed it when I met you. When you touched my neck. She blinks, understanding. You took something then to make it bother you less.
Yes, I did.
He reaches around her head now and sets two of his fingers just at the top of her spine, beneath the back edge of her skull. This touch is not as relaxed as other times he has touched her. The two fingers are stiffened, held as if he's pantomiming a knife. Only he isn't pantomiming, she realizes. She remembers that day in the forest when they reached Found Moon, and the bandits attacked them. Shafa is very, very strong. Easily strong enough to push two fingers through bone and muscle like paper. He wouldn't have needed a rock to break her hand. Shafa's gaze searches hers and finds that she understands precisely what he's thinking about doing.
You aren't afraid?
She shrugs.
Tell me why you aren't.
His voice brooks no disobedience. Just, she cannot help shrugging again. She can't really figure out how to say it. I don't. I mean, if you have a good reason.
You have no inkling of my reasons, little one.
I know. She scowls, more out of frustration with herself than anything else. Then an explanation occurs to her. Daddy didn't have a reason when he killed my little brother. Or when he knocked her off the wagon, or any of the other half dozen times he's looked at Nasun and thought about killing her so obviously that even a 10-year-old can figure it out. An ice-white blink. What happens then is fascinating to watch. Slowly, Shafa's expression thaws from the contemplation of her murder into wonder again, and a sorrow so deep that it makes a lump come to Nasun's throat.
And you have seen so much purposeless suffering that at least being killed for a reason can be borne.
He's so much better at talking. She nods emphatically. Shafa sighs. She feels his fingers waver.
But this is not a thing that can be known beyond my order. I let a child live once who saw. but I should not have. And we both suffered for my compassion. I remember that.
I don't want you to suffer, Nasun says. She puts her hands on his chest, wills the silver flickers within him to take more. They begin to drift toward her.
It always hurts.
That isn't right.
Many things ease the pain. Smiling, for example, releases specific endorphins, which...
He jerks and takes his hand from the back of her neck, grabbing her hands and pulling them away from him, just as the silver threads find her. He actually looks alarmed.
That will kill you.
You're going to kill me anyway. This seems sensible to her.
He stares. Earth of our fathers and mothers.
But with that, slowly, the killing tension begins to bleed out of his posture. After a moment, he sighs.
Never speak of what you sess in me around the others. If the other guardians learn that you know, I may not be able to protect you.
Nasun nods. I won't. Will you tell me what it is?
Someday, perhaps.
He gets to his feet. Nasun hangs on to his hand when he tries to pull away. He frowns at her, bemused. But she grins and swings his hand a little, and after a moment he shakes his head. Then they head back into the compound. And that is the first day that Nasun thinks of it as home.
Seek the origin in its crib. Watch for the center of the circle. There you will find...
obscured.
Tablet 2, The Incomplete Truth, verse 5.